2020 saw a spike in urban violence, and some are calling for the defunding of the police. We're going to talk right now with a man named Bob Woodson, who's done a lot to help urban renewal, and he does not think that's a good idea. In fact, he wrote an article for that or about that, and we're going to link to that article. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Bob Woodson, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Pleased to be here.
And let me just say this introduction. Bob Woodson is the founder and president of the Woodson Center, which works to empower indigenous leaders in troubled neighborhoods to increase public safety, spur upward mobility, and inspire racial unity in America. His new book is Lessons from the Least of These, The Woodson Principles. And let me just start with that, the lessons from the least of these. When I hear that phrase, the least of these, my mind immediately races to Matthew chapter 25, something from Jesus Christ.
That's an excellent reference. That's where I'm coming from also. That if you look in the Bible, God never uses accomplished people. He always uses broken people. Every one of the heroes in the Bible are people who have overcome great challenges and were redeemed from their past. And they are the most prophetic leaders because they lead from a position of a witness, not an advocate. So that's what we are. I have found over the course of my 40 years working in low-income communities that the problems, solutions to the problems, abide in the same place that the problem exists among the people who are suffering the problem. And so I have walked with many grassroots leaders who have, by their own witness, overcome great challenges in their lives, and they've gone on to influence countless others to find redemption and transformation in the midst of the most toxic communities around. And when they have come together in clusters, they have formed sort of like an immune system and have been able to transform whole communities. What I've done in my book is I've written, reflected on what lessons I've learned from walking with these grassroots leaders. And so I've distilled it into 10 principles, and each one occupies a chapter in the book. And I give examples of those principles in action.
All right. Well, just as a global thought, what are your thoughts about defunding the police?
I just think it's a death sentence for grassroots people. The people who are advocating that don't have to suffer the consequence of their advocacy. In other words, the more the police over the last 10 years have been vilified by people, the result has been that police have withdrawn. They have ceased being aggressive in enforcing laws in those low-income, high-crime neighborhoods. And as a consequence, the murder rate has gone up. If you look at Pew polls, 82% of low-income blacks do not support defunding the police.
Wow.
But the advocates who do live in secure communities themselves, and their children are not the ones being killed. Since George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis, 40 young blacks under the age of 15 have been murdered on our streets, but yet no one talks about that. There's no outrage. All that the people are talking, the radical leftists is talking about, is defunding the police.
Those 40 that were killed, is this like gangland violence? Is this black-on-black crime?
Black-on-black crime. They're all, the latest one last week was a 15-year-old little baby here in Washington, D.C., shot to death by a drive-by shooting.
Wow.
And this is common. In St. Louis last spring, over the course of a 16-day period, 15 young people under the ages of 15 were murdered and only one arrest. And so we have a hemorrhage of death. 70 over this past weekend shot in Chicago, 20 at one time here in Washington, D.C., shot, three killed. But this isn't reported because it's not news. And that's because people have weaponized race, and they are pointing the accusing finger at police as an extension of white supremacy. And that has really, and also because of the riots that are occurring downtown in various cities and the unrest, it means police resources are being assigned to patrol those areas. Also, there has been a 60% decline in police recruiting. Many police departments in cities can't even respond to 911 calls in under 30 minutes because there's been a depletion of law enforcement assets.
Wow, what a disaster. And so, in other words, all this stuff is just going to even get worse because in the long run, you've got police retiring early because, you know, let's face it, it's like a no-win situation for them.
Most white police officers end up putting black children in body bags and knocking on their doors of their parents to tell them that their son or their daughter is dead. They're not out shooting blacks. There have been, in the course of a year, 14 blacks shot killed the way George Floyd was. Not even that bad. 14. At the same time, 7,000 blacks were killed by other blacks in the cities. But you don't know that because even the vice presidential Kamala-elect Kamala Harris and Michelle Obama at the Democratic National Convention talked about George Floyd as if this is a recurring problem. They both said, and this is an increasing problem. It's not. It's 14 people in the course of a year, and yet they're trying to paint a picture that somehow this is a systemic problem. It's just not true. It's a false narrative. What is true is black-on-black deaths, but it doesn't fit the political narrative, and so you don't have it even reported. It's not a scandal.
All right, let's talk solution for a moment, solutions, potential solutions. In your article, you mentioned that in 1998, there was a public housing complex in Washington, D.C., the Benning Terrace Public Housing Complex, and there were a lot of serious problems, notorious killing field there, and somehow, by God's grace, things were able to turn around. Tell us the story.
Well, this is typical. What happened was there were five men called the Alliance of Concerned Men. These are ex-offenders, again, who had come to Christ, turned their lives around, and they were a force for good. They became ambassadors of peace. And I've been training them about how to do gang intervention. And this 12-year-old boy was killed, and I said to them, you should go in that neighborhood and bring the warring factions to my office. So they brought 16 young men to my office downtown, and we negotiated a truce. And those same young men who were turned around, so those 16 young men became peacekeepers in their community, and they were working to restore the very community that they were destroying. And so I'm sorry. They were destroyed. So they were peacekeepers, and as a consequence, they were able to restore that community, and they became counselors to the younger children, with the result that we didn't have a single gang murder for 12 years.
Wow. And that was the Benning Terrace Public Housing Complex.
Public Housing, yes. Yeah, PBS did a special on it, and so we learned from that, and we took the principles of intervention by using grassroots leaders. We applied it to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Dallas, Texas. So we learned a lot about how to intervene in crime-ridden neighborhoods. But it's been very difficult to get officials to accept it because the people who are making this change and this improvement don't have college degrees. They're not the usual providers of service. So elitism is the most difficult barrier that we face, trying to convince funders and others that even though people may be untutored, it doesn't mean they're unwise.
Okay, suppose the mayor of Chicago would call you, and I can't imagine that she would, but suppose she did, and she said, okay, Bob Woodson, I understand you have some potential solutions for me in this violence, crime-ridden city. What do you suggest?
I would say, let's just take one neighborhood, a geographical neighborhood, and let us come in identifying the healing agents there, the counterpart, the Alliance of Concerned Men, pay them and to be moral mentors and character coaches in their community, put them on the streets, let them circulate. They're usually from that community. Let them begin to apply the same strategies of intervention that we did in Benning Terrace, and we can create an island of excellence in that neighborhood. And once you see it working, then we can expand it to other neighborhoods. And then that's how you can build it out, and you will see a dramatic reduction in violence if you just take that approach.
Okay, how's it going where you are in D.C.?
Well, the same group. First of all, right after it was successful, the city withdrew from the approach and went back to the same tactics that worked, that failed before. They didn't continue to fund the program, and as a result, they put money into shot detectors, video cameras, and increasing police patrols, and they just walked away from that intervention. And as a consequence, the crime rate went up, and so it's back the way it was before. Because they refuse to refund. People are stuck on traditional ways of handling problems, and a lot of times, and so they just refuse to invest in this approach. By contrast, the city of Milwaukee has, over the past 17 years, invested in it, and we have our crime intervention program in about 13 of those public schools, with the result that those schools are more peaceful than they were without them. So the only place in the country that really accepted it was the city of Milwaukee.
All right, here's a quote from your article. What works is the extraordinary power of grassroots leaders to transform the lives of forgotten men and women in the most toxic neighborhoods. People are capable of being agents of their own uplift. In 2020, the focus has been too much on themes of oppression and not enough on themes of self-empowerment. End quote.
Absolutely. You have a lot of people who have invested heavily in tribalism or in racial antagonism, that somehow that America is divided between villains and victims, and that all black people are victims and all white people are villains. I mean, where's the winning strategy in that? Yeah. You know, and so what we're trying to do at the Woodson Center is we're trying to direct attention away from these losing strategies of finger pointing and blaming, the blame game. And instead, we should be investing ourselves in solutions such as the one that we have been involved in.
You know, that's a very good point. In fact, I personally wrote an article about power versus empowerment, saying that a lot of these politicians are just basically wanting power. And even if that means they have a voter base of people who are perpetually poor, but they'll always be in power. Meanwhile, what really is most important is self-empowerment of the people for themselves. We have about 15 seconds to wrap up, sir.
Well, white guilt is the new racism.
Wow.
I think that people have using white guilt as a way of power, and people have used black victimization as a means of power. And we have to wrestle control from both of those groups.
Do you have a website?
Yes, www.woodsoncenter.org or 1776unites with an S.com. 1776unites.com.
Okay, Bob Woodson, thanks so much for being with us. All the best, sir.
Okay, thank you.